Welcome to Hypothesis with Bevan Findlay. We're exploring the powerful healing potential of cannabis and other plant medicine. On each episode, Bevan dives into the latest research and stories from the world of cannabis, the history and evolution of the plant, to groundbreaking research on its therapeutic effects. He interviews medical cannabis experts and practitioners, civil rights activists and scientists, and everyday people benefiting from cannabis plant medicine. Join Bevan as he seeks to uncover the truth about the healing potential of cannabis and its ability to improve the lives of millions worldwide.
Welcome back to another episode of Hypothesis. I'm so grateful to be here with my buddy, Adhu Krishnan from Akabeshka. I've known this brother for a few years now, feels like forever. And I'm so grateful for him spending time to come and hang out with me tonight and talk with you guys and get to know what he's been up to. I'm so grateful. So, yo, man, thanks for being here, brother.
Thank you, brother, man. I'm very, very grateful and always happy to support anything that you're doing. As long as I've known Bevan, always been a force for good in this industry and just in general with people with health and wellness and education. So it's always a pleasure for me because the most important thing for me is knowledge. So when I meet up with people who are trying to learn and trying to actually do things like that on that side of things, then I'm always happy to be here and support. So I appreciate you, man. I'm grateful to be here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thanks, man. And so before we get started, can you let everybody know who you are?
Sure. My name is Adityan Krishnan. My company is AK Abeksha. So this company, the name AK Abeksha actually means supreme abode of healing and compassionate care. So what we're trying to do is really institute self-healing mechanisms, institute compassionate nature for everybody, not just ourselves and our communities, but for all communities, and especially for future generations, to be able to have a comprehensive healthcare system and good food and accessibility to good medicine for children. So, you know, that starts with education, that starts with farming, that starts with making products, understanding how your food and your medicine comes about and how to actually work with it and utilize it. And then it also comes with understanding, you know, the natural principles of life and nature with the cycles of, you know, the days and how different elements work together. So I'm a student of Ayurveda, and I'm definitely, you know, I'm very grateful to be spreading more information on that. As much as I can possibly learn, I want to also teach with that. So, you know, there's going to be more content coming soon as far as health and wellness, education, daily health, lifestyle stuff.
Nice, nice, man. Can you talk a little bit more about what Ayurveda is for those of people who don't know?
Sure. So Ayurveda is an ancient system of science, specifically dealing with health and wellness. But in general, it's actually also a comprehensive, thorough system of understanding nature as a whole. So the key principle of Ayurveda is, the unity principle, unity consciousness, right? So the whole idea is that the entirety of the world, all life is unified, and it all comes from the same level of consciousness. So through tapping into the self, you're able to perceive greater nature and greater aspects of life. And basically living through balance helps you to achieve better health, better output in life, better mental health and better mental balance. And it's, you know, overall a comprehensive, more holistic form of living. So Ayurveda originated in India over 10,000 years ago. It's really just been a natural system of medicine. The time that it got formalized was about 5,000 years ago, in the sense of writing it in different texts to be passed on to future generations. But prior to that, for many, many thousands of years, it was really practiced as a system of medicine, from herbal medicine to, you know, surgery to, like dealing with complex disease controls, pathology, all of that, they were able to do really from understanding natural medicine systems. So a lot of the modern research right now, modern science coming, actually comes from a lot of this information that's been passed down by our ancestors, you know, thousands of years ago. So what we're trying to do now is really to revive that tradition, bring it back here, especially educating people to understand that, you know, there's certain principles of diet, certain principles of sleep, certain principles of, you know, how you should be thinking about yourself, mental health. These are all, you know, regular things and actually really important things that are vital to our survival and how we can thrive in this world.
That's what's up. So then how does Ayurveda and cannabis like work together?
So Ayurveda has a comprehensive way of classifying any herb, right? Any substance at all. So it's not just drugs necessarily. It's not necessarily just a plant herb in the sense that we think about it, but it's any substance that we're going to intake. So from the foods to the medicines, there's a classification for all those. So if you take any herb that grows anywhere in the world, you can actually classify it within our Ayurvedic system. So one example is like, I actually presented at the Cannabis Science Conference in Baltimore a couple of weeks ago. So that was a really great experience. We presented on the wholesome use of cannabis and how cannabis is viewed in Ayurveda. So to kind of teach more so on the how our ancestors were wholesomely using this medicine. What were they actually doing with it? You know, were they rolling it up and smoking it a lot? Were they, you know, making it into oils? How were they actually processing the medicine to be able to, you know, use it for themselves, but also industrially in agriculture and everything else? What did they actually do with cannabis realistically? Because I think that a lot of people nowadays have a very glorified image of cannabis as well in their minds, that they're like, okay, well, like, you know, we're like, you if you legalize cannabis, like everything is going to be solved, like they'll cure cancer, they'll cure all world hunger, everything is going to be alleviated, you can grow hemp and it's going to make, you know, hemp plastics and hemp cream, everything is like, those are all really good applications of hemp. But we also don't want to get stuck in the idea of monocropping. Because, you know, no civilization and society ever in history, in any kind of like culture, has ever really thrived for a long period of time off of monocropping. You know, like you have to have a comprehensive ecosystem. You need to have multiple vegetables, multiple herbs, multiple different types of crops to support each other and support the community too. Because, you know, what happens if you get a disease and then all of a sudden all the hemp is gone? That means, does that mean the whole society is going to crumble because you guys built everything around hemp? Like, it doesn't work like that, right? So Ayurveda actually provides a really good comprehensive way of how to analyze hemp. And one of the key principles that we took from it, from that research that we were doing, is that the way that we're processing hemp is actually completely backwards. So, and the way that we view and we think about it, cannabis as a whole. So right now, cannabis is actually being processed decarbed in order to activate the cannabinoids. Right. So you're going from THCA, from the acid form, into the actual cannabinoid activated form. So you're going from THCA into THC, CBDA into CBD, et cetera, et cetera. So when those conversions are happening, what you're doing is actually you're activating certain parts of the plant that also potentiate the high, like that actually, you know, potentiates the mental effects, whatever the case, and also some of the toxic effects. And there's a lot of studies that even came out more recently. I think in 2019, like Wake Forest University, they did a really cool study that proved that there's a effective ratio of, I think, don't quote me on this, I'll correct this number later if I'm wrong, but it's like, I think it was 6 to 1 CBD to THC is what it requires for you to negate the effects of the toxic effects of THC. To actually negate the high, you need to have 6 parts CBD to 1 part THC, right? So it's like, were you about to say something?
No, I was just, I'm just like, you know me, man. When I get a knowledge, I'm just like, all right.
Yeah, man. Like, dude, this stuff like blew my mind, right? So like, this is the way that there's certain ratios in the plant. So what's happening is that we're going about the plant in the sense of like, everybody makes products and they're like, yo, you have to decarb. And then once you decarb, you make that into the product formulation. But what you're doing when you're decarbing is you're largely converting acids into the active cannabinoids. So once you do that, you're actually losing certain medicinal potencies. They're different then, right? So the active cannabinoids do something different and the acids do something different. You actually need a certain delicate balance and mix of everything. And some of the more recent studies are also proving that the acids at a smaller concentration are more effective than the cannabinoids activated at a larger concentration. So you may not actually need as much medicine as you think if you're using the right type of the medicine and what part of the plant, how you're processing it, right? So like, instead of decarbing, what you should actually be doing is purification. In Ayurveda, they call it shodhana. And they have like a bunch of different types of purification methods, boiling it in ghee, in milk, or just washing it with water, or using certain kinds of herbs, mixing that with the water, and then using that to purify the cannabis. Like, there are certain things that they would do. And what the point of these methods was actually to remove toxins. So they're with that, they were actually removing a part of the THC from the plant too. So if you think about it, it's like, maybe you don't need like a super, super high THC, all this stuff. It's like, they were actually making medicine after purification. And it specifically says that in all the Ayurvedic texts on cannabis, like in so many different ones over spans of thousands of years, every single person says the same thing. It's like, you should not consume cannabis without purifying it first. Consumption of pure, of unpurified cannabis is what creates the toxic states, the mental vitiations, the, you know, problems with your health, problems with mental health, all the aspects of the ailments, like everything is coming from us basically improperly using this plant. Like, even thinking about cannabis hypermesis syndrome, or even all these things that are coming out now more prevalent, right? Like, you have to ask, why are these things coming out now? Because everybody's smoking so much cannabis. Like, you don't actually need to be smoking all this cannabis. The best way to do it is, if you want to use it for the medicine, you should be eating it, and eating it certain forms of consuming cannabis, right? So, my bad. I didn't want to, you know what I'm saying?
I'm like, yo, but because when you first brought it up, I was thinking about CHS, right? And we just mentioned, because one of my friends, Mary Jane, on Instagram was talking about CHS. And I remember, I think it was 3 years ago, it started becoming a thing. Everybody was like, no, CHS wasn't real. And CHS just means it's kind of like a syndrome where you take too much THC. And if I can recall correctly, I think it was 2020, a study came out that showed right before the pandemic that showed that taking too much cannabis isn't really good for you, right? Like you think about everybody goes like, oh, I'm on 30%, I'm on 40% THC. And all that really doesn't really do much for you because the body already needs so much, right? And it's going to be interesting to see over the next few years how studies come out that show that, hey, everybody who smokes too much isn't really doing good. This is why CBD, hemp is really good. And I love the fact that you dropped it, that the natural, man, like for me, I always think about Bob Marley, going way back. It wasn't cannabis. Now it wasn't cannabis that was then, right? A lot of it had more CBC in there. And two, most people, right, actually know the burning bush, but average person, from my understanding, was probably done more of mixing with the olive oil, right? From the med, olive oil is a really good component to mix with cannabinoids. And so just so much, man, so much out there. So when you was talking about that, man, I was like, wow, he's like refreshed a lot of my memory. And like, it's just so important for us to understand this plant.
Yeah, man, there's so much like depth in the plant itself, right? And it's like, if we try to do everything for profit and we try to do everything through the lens of capitalization, then it's like, yo, you really miss out on what's actually going on here. It's like, you can grow 1,000 hemp plants or 1,000 cannabis plants or whatever and make all these products, whatever. But it's like, did you really even understand what that plant is supposed to do? Like, you're trying to produce the plant to create a certain amount of THC, but what's actually naturally the ratios within the plant that it's supposed to create some kind of medicine, you know, on its own? It's already providing something, right? Like, no matter what strain of hemp or cannabis, whatever, that you cultivate, it has a specific ratio of the cannabinoid acids to the terpenes to the active cannabinoids. Like, everything, like, week to week, it changes in the growth stages, right? Like, in week five of flower versus week six versus seven versus eight, like, that ratio is slightly changing a little bit by little bit by little bit. So it's like, without understanding the science, we're just looking at, like, oh, when's the plant going to be most mature? When can I get the most yield off of this? Like, how can I get the most money off of selling this product type of deal? Like, there's so much corruption in the way that people are looking at this beautiful plant that really is meant to be like a source of knowledge and a source of divine medicine, right? Like, even that's another thing that in the Ayurvedic texts, like, there's five different plants that are considered soma, which is like another word. Sometimes people take it as immortality, it can be translated as. But like, essentially, it's like five different plants that grant humanity certain kind of a extreme state of consciousness, or a certain side of an advancement or a progress, something that's not existent in other plants in the rest of the world, something that's special and unique about these five plants. And of those, cannabis is one of those plants. So like, but that's not to say that those other five plants are also like not just as amazing, right? There's also another one called, like, barley is another one of those plants, I believe. I'll have to double check on that list to make sure I'm translating properly. But basically, those five plants all have different kinds of medicinal properties, all have different kinds of things that they can do. Like, you can make alcohol out of barley, whatever the case. Like, there's things that like have disciplines for each of these, but you have to use it in the right way. Otherwise, like, we're just abusing the plant. Then at that point, we're just doing drugs. And it's like, we can't pass that on to the next generation and be like, yeah, we made a big change and made the cannabis industry. It's like, what do we really do?
Yeah, because everybody thinks it's the jump into it. Look at the bright side, and then look at I won't say negatives, but there's always positive and negative energy, right? And cannabis is wonderful. Like I love it. I use it every day, but I'm not gonna use it when I have an important meeting, right? I don't want to be even that just that little bit, right? So it's important to understand the plan. And yo, that was great. That was great. Oh. So like how so all right. There's so much I gotta ask.
Hear me, man. I know. I know. I'm here. I'm here. I'm open door today.
How do you get like, so how long have you been into cannabis? Like,
Major shout out to my man Julian Bannister. He's also my partner in AKA Vaiksha and Green Lotus Society, and like pretty much,
Julian.
yeah, Julian, Black Lotus Organics. Literally every business that I'm doing, my brother's a part of that business because really there's an alignment in the way that we work together, and that's how we started doing business together. Is back with I-71, we started to grow together, and we started this company with one of our other partners to essentially help people get educated on how to grow. So we would set them up with the grow kits, we'd set them up with tents, with the systems. If they want to do hydroponic, we set them hydroponics. If they want to do soil, we could do soil, we could do a mix. Like we give them the nutrients, seed to sale management, the clones, like help them with harvest, all that stuff. Like just to get people educated, because it's really important that people can grow their own at home. And like when that law passed up, it's like there was an opening in the legal structure, but nobody actually knew what to do, because it's like the people who did know either were locked up or they were super underground with it, and they didn't really want to spread the information in a certain type of way. So like when I really fell in love with cannabis was then. It's like I started growing it, and like I literally remember the first first six plants I had in my bedroom, like in a small tent. It was Critical Kush and Sour Diesel. And
Wow.
man, I'm telling you, like those were some of the most fantastic times like that I can imagine, like think about in a growing process, like really to sit there and learn, understand this is what it is. If I plant it in a seed, this is how it is. And I germinate that seed, then it comes into this stage, like week by week, seeing the progress and the development of that plant. That's when I really like understood. I was like, this is something so much more than I thought it was. Before then, it's like I had only seen cannabis in a commercial sense. It's like, wow, like I could see so many plants, whatever, took that for granted. Like, or I'd see so much like cannabis, like bagged up, all this stuff, took that for granted, whatever. Or like, you know, all these different products, edibles, this and that. I'd see the process of actually making it, extracting cannabis, making VHO extractions, live resin, whatever, rosin. I'd seen it all, but it's like never really like I did not understand it as well until I started growing the plant. Once I started growing the plant, then I was full deep into it. And like for me, I love science. Like I said, I love knowledge, I love learning. So like once I started seeing there's so many different aspects of this, it's like, okay, there's so much application. It's really God's grace that like I did have the opportunity to start growing with that. And I met Julian and we started doing those things together, because through that opportunity, then like I did have the basis of some kind of structure and knowledge to start making medicine, like with that actual cannabis that we grew. And this was before the Hemp Farming Act, before anything, right? So like we weren't selling any of this stuff. It was literally just we were making it and formulating it and trying it for ourselves, like just doing that like at home, just because we wanted to see what we could do with this product, what we could actually do with this medicine that we're growing. And that's when you know, I had a family member who had a really bad accident and they were in severe pain. They needed pain relief alternative to narcotics. And so I started to look into this, and I was like, yo, you know, I grew all this like this stuff right here. Is like, you know, I could be smoking it, you know, I could be doing all kinds of stuff, but it's like let me try to actually do something productive with this. So that's when we started doing different trials, making topicals, making tinctures, honey teas. Like the infused honey and the infused teas were actually a hit for my brother, like and for a bunch of other people that I was, you know, working with. They had some different chronic pains that they wanted to try these different things out, so they would, you know, go ahead and they would do their thing with that. You know, I wasn't a medical professional at the time, so I couldn't recommend anybody anything. I wasn't trying to do anything like that, but it's like some people, like they literally, people were begging to try this stuff just because of the way that it was affecting, you know, the people that it was affecting. And it's really just like the way I was doing everything was 100% simple. Like I didn't put anything unnatural in there. Everything was a natural process of even the infusions themselves, doing everything low temp, being intentional about that. And like shout out to the OGs that really taught me those things, because back then we didn't have all the YouTube videos we have nowadays. We didn't have all the books and everything we have nowadays. So like it really was just like the few people who knew it, like you can learn by watching them, and then you have to try to learn and do things on your own and just apply as much as you can, and start like just developing that process, do your own research, right? And like this is plant medicine like any other medicine. So one thing led to the next, and we started making these products, working for a lot of people. So that's when I started to like, I went to go get my master's in Ayurveda, because I wanted to learn more about how to actually work with plant medicine, not just with cannabis specifically, but like how do all herbs work? Because even with that, you know, when I was making the topicals, the first topical I ever made was literally coconut oil and cannabis. That's it. And I'm talking about this is like high THC cannabis, so this joint was smelling like it was a very like. It was a very pungent batch of coconut oil, I will say. And but like even that, like that was extremely like powerful medicine for localized pain relief. Like whether you know you're rubbing it on something, whatever the case, or even like for internal pain relief and inflammation control, eating that was also helpful. So that was cool. But then I started to realize, okay, well, let me put some other herbs into this. Like, what does it look like if I put, like an arnica oil in here? Or what if I put, like calendula or St. John's wort or, eucalyptus, whatever. There's so many different herbs that we can try, whatever. So I started to put those in there. And before I even did that, I basically put cocoa butter as the base because I wanted something more of a like actual creamy base, something that would help nourish the skin as well. So that's why the first version of the Cocoa Caress, we called it the Cocoa Caress because it was literally cocoa butter, coconut oil, and cannabis, and that was it. And it straight up smelled like chocolate and weed. So that's why it was called Cocoa Caress. And people were like, "Yeah, we got caressed by this chocolate joint." So.
I never knew that, man. Like, and I have it right here too, so check it out.
There we go. There we go. Yes,
Yeah,
sir. Yes,
you
sir.
know mine's empty, right? So you got, no, I gotta get some more. But check that out, T.
Oh
That's
man,
great.
it's bare, bare.
It's amazing, like things you can't do, especially when you have like me having back pain and having have osteoarthritis. This thing works wonderful, man. So since we're on the topic now, I know you're dropping a new one, right? Can you talk a little bit more
Yes.
about it?
Yes, so we're actually doing. We've been working on this new formulation for about 3 years now. This is like it's doing a lot of different trials. Did a couple focus groups. Got a lot of information behind this. This is a completely different formulation. The Cocoa Caress. I started with the cocoa butter, mango butter, shea butter, coconut oil, and then 11 healing herbs. Once I got into that final formulation version of that one, but I wanted to find out what herbs would actually work a lot better for, especially nerve pain, arthritic pain, those deep tendon and nerve tissue damage. Going past the muscle level, how can we actually help people restore things and not just take away the pain on or inflammation on the surface level, but how do you restore blood flow to that place and how do you restore function to that area? So when I started working with more research with that, the Ayurvedic program and talking through my teachers, I got some access to other information that allowed me to formulate something that has a lot more of a powerful potency, but also it works a lot faster. So if you compare the Cocoa Caress to this, Cocoa Caress generally works between 5 to 15 minutes for people. This one works with between 1 to 5 minutes. So like the difference in that is major game changer for people. Another aspect is that for people who have neuropathy, nerve damage, like I'm not, I don't want to embellish any of this. I'm not saying that this is like what I'm, marketing this as or anything like that. This is what people have been telling me. We had this one person who, she has neuropathy in her legs and like she literally couldn't feel her toes, right? Like for a very, very long time, significantly could not feel her toes. And she put this on her shins and her feet just a little bit. She put the Prasada on there. And within 75 seconds, she was feeling restoration all the way down to her toes, wiggling her toes, being able to feel movement coming back again. And that's just like off of a topical. That's not consuming anything, no crazy massage technique, no anything at all. It's just speaking to the medicine, the formulation that's in there as it is.
Amazing,
So,
man.
yeah, it's really like it's God's grace, man. Like that's actually so that's what prasada means. So in Hindu culture we have this thing called prasadam. So it's like it's a divine offering. Or like a sanctified offering, like to God, from God as well.
Okay.
And generally, like people, it may be in the form of like a food or whatever the case. It's like the same way that we say grace, like we try to offer whatever we're eating to God before we eat it. The same way it's like for us, like in the formulation of this medicine, everything is supposed to be through that divine power, that divine healing, right? So like this itself, like prasada is like it's a divine grace. It's a gift from God, like. It's not necessarily me doing anything. It's not us like, making these products, whatever the case. It's literally all this is coming through divine grace. The fact that we have this medicine, the fact that it works like this, like this is all just like, it's a grace to have that. So we actually we're housing this in our new topical containers. So the old containers look like this. So you can see they're spherical, right? So they're usual, the same thing that well, this one's been around in my bag a little bit, so. I like to have an experiment batch where I let things, melt around and see
Walk
what
around with it, man.
where
Never
I walk
knew.
around with it and see what happens. So this is what it looks like on the inside. This is actually the prasad. I've been using this for a little bit. So, but this container is great, fantastic. It's actually produced handmade by our partners in Bali, Indonesia. Great people, small family business, super aligned values with us. So we wanted to work with them and continue building with them. They're a small family business, we're a small family business. We want to build together and grow together. They make these products unique. The problem with these is the bamboo is actually cracking a lot. It easily break. It's a lot more susceptible to coming apart from the glue, things like that. So we wanted to design a container that's going to be a lot more user-friendly and something that, ultimately most of our clients in the aging demographic, a lot of the older people, they're going to be people who have arthritis, mobility issues, and not just in the aging demographic, but really in any of these demographics. Even athletes have a lot of these problems. Anybody like from an office worker to an athlete has like something from carpal tunnel to arthritis. So, people who have dexterity issues, gripping the container, whatever the case, we wanted to make those things easier. So we came up with the cube container. So this is our own, proprietary design. We came up with this. So what we're trying to do with this, the idea is that the cube is a lot easier to grip for people who have dexterity issues, so they can just easily turn it. And then on the inside, same thing. This one is empty, but you have the medicine on the inside there. So, and also the cube is not going to roll away if somebody drops it. So a lot of the older folks, the problem with the spear is like if they do drop that joint and they're on a hill, good luck. That joint is gone. So we want to give them a better solution for that. So yeah, definitely really excited about these. These will be dropping soon. We're actually doing a pre-sale for them coming up October 15th. So we will be dropping that, I believe, on Kickstarter, but I'm gonna double check on that. But we're gonna do a campaign basically where we want to get people pre-sailed. We're gonna cap it at 500 units, and after the pre-sale is over, those units will be fulfilled. And we just want to do this so that we can get the word out and get some funding behind our project as well, because we are doing everything self-funded. So any kind of sales, anything that comes into the company, we put directly back into research and development, the science that we're doing, obtaining the packaging, the materials that we need to actually make these products. So definitely, every penny counts. And if you guys are interested in supporting us, definitely we'll be putting that crowdfunding link up soon.
Yeah, that's what's up. So I'm curious, why 3 years? What like to launch a product?
So man, like it takes a lot of time, right? So really, like Coco Caress took me realistically like 2.5 years, like 2 years to really for me to be comfortable to release it like in that final formulation phase, right? Like I was doing a lot of iterations over the time, but like a lot of, for me personally, like I had to really know that this product is gonna be there, it's gonna be good, it's gonna stick. Like I don't want to release a product and then have to bring it back, recall it, whatever, and then try to do something else. Like I want to make sure it's gonna be right the first time. So that like that formulation, the combination between the herbs, has to be very specific because all these herbs co-interact. So you don't want herbs that are going to be co-interacting negatively, or you don't want herbs that might be temperature sensitive. So it's like one herb might burn off at certain temperatures, and then another one might be sustained. Like there's so many things that happens in between the formulation there. So it takes me sometimes a while to do that and develop that. And with the new formulation, it took me 3 years because at the time I was doing the Ayurvedic program part time while I was working a full time job, as well as also running this business and doing the farming and doing another business too. So it's like I was spread out super thin. I could only do what I could at a time. But I'm also like I'm glad and grateful because everything is in that specific timing. Everything happens for a reason. So we weren't ready to have this formulation before, but the formulation was ready for us exactly at the time that it was. So it kind of just it dropped into our lap and aligned in the right way. There was a couple last bits of the formulation that I wanted to try one other ingredient to see if it's going to help more for the nerve pain, and it worked really effectively. So, we try to be super intentional with this and super focused with this and make sure that we're giving enough love into the process and more enough attention to the process so that we can make the most effective medicine for people. So we're finally ready to release it though.
I love it, man. And when I teach in class, I always tell students, this is a long journey, right?
Yeah.
Don't be trying to get rich quick. It's all about helping people. And when you help people, all the riches and things come back to you, right? The abundance. So, man, that's amazing. Yeah, dude, that's so much I gotta ask. So before I get into like the really fun part of this podcast, right? Can you talk about all the work you're doing at American University?
Yes. So I'm actually in American University right now. This is the business incubator. So they call it American University Center for Innovation, I believe. Yeah, American University Center for Innovation at UCI. So this place is hosting an incubator program where they have student-run ventures as well as alumni-run ventures that can apply there. And if accepted, we get a year in the facility where we can utilize the space, which is a really nice co-working space with some high-tech, screens and everything, and having recording capabilities, whiteboards, all this stuff. And then it's 24/7 access. And then also we have access to some mentorship resources. And sometimes they'll post like links for grants or links for pitch competitions or, you know, different opportunities like that. So it's definitely, you know, it's a good opportunity for us. And we're very grateful because like we're doing everything that we can in a very like limited, constrained environment sometimes. So like, it's good to come out here and like have a place to come and work and actually have a desk that I can spread out on and do these things on. So
I love it, man. Congrats. How hard is it to get in the program?
I believe it's like one out of 100 something applicants or accepted or something like that. I got to double check, but they accepted, I believe, less than 10 applicants this year. So yeah, we got in, and like, it's God's grace that we got in. We've been applying for 2 years now before then. So this is the year that we got accepted. You know, all happens for a reason.
It's amazing, man. It's amazing. Hey, so I have some fun questions I want to ask you, right?
Yes, sir. Hit me, man.
I got to light up first, man. So this is hypothesis, right? And so I'm kind of experimenting a little bit with the format. But for me, I want to make sure I infuse something here. So today I went to see the acupuncture. And after I did that, I went and met somebody. Well, connected with my friend Kay Vaughn, who I'm working in Grenada with. So like, it's just funny how cannabis, right? I find that it brings us together, because a lot of people now that I'm starting to collaborate and meet, like, hey, they're from Grenada, and so positive. So he gave me this wonderful gift right here. So I'm gonna light it up and stuff, right? And then this is amazing right here. So check this out. It's rechargeable lighter, right? And so you can see I have two dots. So it's fully has four dots on there. And so it's windproof. It sparks up, right? Can you see that?
Yeah, little X, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's so much better than flames. And highly recommend everybody to get one. Yeah, it's so quick and easy.
Okay.
Yeah, I wish I had this so many times when I went outside. You know, the wind blowing. You got like everybody got to huddle up together, right? Yeah. Make sure one person have a good lighter. So like with this right here, you don't need it. That's a little gold color right here, man. Ooh, this is nice.
Man, for a while, I don't know what's up with that. Like, I think it was really made by the company. I'm not sure if this is real, but like Bugatti used to make these really nice lighters, like these, like the same type of, like what you're talking about. It would be like a windless lighter or like windproof lighter. And it would be just like a little beam of electricity type of thing. It was cool.
It's amazing, man. Yeah. And this is why I would recommend you guys to grow your own. And
yeah.
As a matter of fact, we have a grow class, right? So make sure you guys put the grow class in Mimea. But yeah, like, because for me, most of the stuff on the market, people just gift you as indicators, right? So at least for me, I don't find too many sativas on out there. So it's wonderful, man. Like,
you gotta grow those sativas, though, yo.
I can't wait. I got a little. I have a space tote, so I took a big totes to my side, and I got AC Infinity light, so I'm using that, and it's like a little portable. So I'm thinking about I'm ahead of time, right? I'm going to Grenada, so yeah, man.
What should we go to? You're gonna back them up with you.
I'll take it and make you build another one, right? It's easy. It took me an hour to build one, long you have the parts, right?
You know, but the way you said it, it just, you made me think about like putting one of those little handles on top of it and you know, like the dog carriages, like checking a pet carriage is like, yo, here's my support animal.
Putting a box, I'll just ship it to Grenada.
Yeah, for real. But that's dope though. Definitely. Yeah, and that system is pretty cool because like you said, it's very cheap materials, easy, like low infrastructure design. You can do it with just that and then you're good. Just plug it into the wall. It's fine. Yeah. And
I look at it over the long term, it's actually cost you less, right?
Yeah.
And the LEDs now anywhere from what, extra $45 a month?
Yeah.
in electricity, right? For the LED one. So it's wonderful, man.
Yo, what's up with the my bad. I'm gonna ask you one question real quick. What's up with the humidity in that thing though? Because it's pretty thick plastic, right?
Right now it was 50 when I checked earlier, right? That's what it said. So right now it's 79.2 degrees Fahrenheit and 52% humidity.
Okay.
So it maintains humidity too. Plus my temperature here is pretty good.
Oh, I see.
And if I really need to, I can always get me a small humidifier and put in there.
Gotcha.
Or I like to spray up in there inside there in the kind of plants, make it a little
Gotcha.
humid. But I've never really had any issues with these unless you know space where it's super hot, right?
Right.
But put in the closet, it should be good.
Got you. Got you. Okay, hit me, man. What you got?
Yeah, so you know I'm super spiritual, right?
Yes, sir.
After I'm working, well, one of my plans is to get my all my DNA checked again, right? From my culture, from my understanding, I'm from East India, right? So like that the heritage for me and being super open, cannabis actually helped me a lot to be more in tune, right? So I've been like just dumping the knowledge. So I know you're Hindi, like, so were you born here or were you born over, you know, like where were you born, like your family, like
I was born in
background?
Massachusetts, man. So I was actually born in Massachusetts. Grew up there most of my life. And then I only came to DC in 2014. Yeah, 2014, I came to DC for school and then ended up staying here afterwards. But I grew up in Massachusetts mainly. Went to India a lot when I was younger. We used to go a lot before the ticket prices got crazy and before we got older and got into more school and everything. But yeah, mainly grew up here. It's really just like, all like praise to my parents for raising me the way that they did. Like it really was like little India at home, very cultured environment at home. And then like from there I would go out into school and everything else. Like really English is my second or third language. Like Tamil is my first language. Always everything in the house like was very much focused around like this is the environment, this is the way that we're doing things. And then you know we have to interact with the world outside of that. So definitely was blessed to have the experiences that I did through that.
How is it for you when you go back home, like the experience being in the, like, at least for when I go home, I don't think it was just me, but like my parents, my grandparents, my great grandparents before them, like how things have changed. So like how was that like experience going back to the motherland for you?
Man, it's definitely powerful for me to go back and like there's things with it too, like right. So because being here as an immigrant, it's like okay, well, like you're a foreigner, so it's like you're not completely like you know in a certain way not completely connected with everything. And then on the other side, going there too, you're still a foreigner because it's like oh, this guy grew up here the entire time. It's like who are you, right? So like that's one aspect, but like I don't really let that bother me as much because for me it's like connecting into the land, right? So the same connectivity. And like a lot of people have this idea with India that they're like, if I go there, I'm gonna have a spiritual transformation. If I go there, all of a sudden my life's gonna change. I'm gonna meet somebody, or I'm gonna like, you know, I'm gonna have certain experiences in a certain type of way, the way they see it in the movies, or the way they have in their mind, or whatever the case, and then come back here. But it's like, yo, the same way that land there is blessed, this land here is also blessed. It's like literally God is everywhere. Like that creation force makes up everything that there ever was. So the same experiences you can have there, you can also have here because the experience is within yourself. And like for me, like going home, going to India, like more so than anything, it's a really a divine grace and a blessing to me because I get to experience with the culture in an open way. Because like here, we take a lot of things for granted, and the same way there, they take a lot of things for granted that we have, that we don't have here. Like one thing, for example, is like I think about temples. Like where I'm from in India, like in those villages, there's a temple on every street. Like literally every street has a temple, like a small temple, a big temple, like a temple outdoor, a temple indoor, whatever. Like there's always something, some kind of form of like worship and some kind of form of like basically just nature like being there. Like there's always a certain sanctity around that, a certain kind of peace around that. And like, but the people there walking past that, it's like if you see 1,000 temples every day, it's like you probably don't even like think about it that much, right? But then here, it's like if you want to go to a temple, it's like you got to drive 45 minutes, an hour, you know, whatever it is. Like you got to really go somewhere, plan it, think about it, go there. It's like people, so people really appreciate that in a certain type of sense, like in a different way. But the same way for me, like going home, I really enjoy it because like I get to see my family. I get to be immersed in the environment. I get to actually speak my language to like everybody. Because the more that you speak in English, the more you start thinking in English, and then like it really changes your personality too. And every language you speak in is slightly different, part of you too. So that part is great for me. And then the other aspect is really just like tapping into like the actual nature there. Like there's certain like certain things that are well preserved because of the way that people live their lives. Like here in America, oftentimes we have a very like take mentality. So like we drain resources until they're literally gone. Whereas in certain places in the world, like they still have a very much a respect for nature in a way that they preserve it and maintain it just as is the way it's supposed to be. So like I'd really like to go places that have been the same way or a similar way, like in their environment for like thousands of years, for like longer than we can remember, right? So then if you go to those places, you kind of get in a certain sense of like, a certain feeling, a certain connection of what things really are, a certain rooting,
Yeah, spiritual. You feel that connection.
Yeah, definitely. And the same way, it's like there are places like that here in America. It's just that we don't think about it. It's like we really like we call those the flyover states, and we call these all these things like we really don't like think about how much culture and heritage and history America has, just because we think about American history, right? Like, so like it's the same way. Like, there's temples all around us. We just don't look at them. They've just been burnt down, or they've just been replaced with other buildings, or there's things here in this life that for sure is just that powerful.
So true. Here by us is a spring, like 15-minute drive from here, and it's you'll never know it's there, right? It's like in the backyard of like people's houses, and it's a natural spring, that's where I get my water from. So I don't drink water like regular water anymore. So I just get go we take out big bags and go get water.
That's
And
dope.
I was there one day after I came back from acupuncture. I went by. Man, I felt like somebody was watching me because I was kneeling down. I was giving thanks, right, for the water, and we always take like some of the old flowers that we have and as give. And it just feels like somebody's watching you, man. And it's just so, it's so amazing to just say that, hey, this spring right here that was been here forever is still right here, and nobody knows it. Well, not nobody, but most people have no idea.
Or even if they know it, they don't really consider it, or they maybe take it for granted. Like, man, that's so beautiful, like connecting with those things, because like that's more real than anything else. Like we're in an age right now where we're a part of like NFTs and like digital worlds and this and that. It's like so much of our experience has to be removed from us. Instant validation, social media, all these things is like you are removed from the experience. We watch everything through a lens, through a screen, through something else. Like, but actually going to a spring, actually receiving water from there, actually giving gratitude, like this is already the 3D experience. This is already like the 4D experience, whatever they want to call it. Like this is already that like virtual reality. We're living it right now. And it's up to us to actually interact with the elements of nature that we live in. Otherwise we can just we won't like this won't be here for another, five generations, whatever the case. Like we have to enjoy it while it's here and take care of it.
Yeah, that's so true, man. So, what are your thoughts on ayahuasca and how it comes to Ayurvedic medicine?
Yeah, so ayahuasca is a powerful medicine. My comments are that it has to be taken with the proper respects, with the proper, tradition, with the proper environment. It's such a powerful medicine that it's like the same way that you wouldn't like. So people here invite a lot of people to their homes, right? If you think about like you open your house, you're like, okay, yeah, come inside, invite your friends, invite guests, whatever the case. You have to feed that guest. You have to take care of that guest. You have to like at least give them water, something, some kind of like that has to be there, but as a respect for someone coming into your house. Like it's basically God entering your house, right? The same way, like if you invite this kind of a natural, powerful thing, if you in partake with that kind of a form, but you don't actually invite, you're not ready and open, right? You're not actually inviting yourself. You're not inviting yourself to allow yourself to open up and expand that consciousness and actually experience something. Then it can be a very violent interaction. It can be a very jarring interaction. Or also, even if it's not, it can also be a very unfruitful interaction, right? It can literally be a waste of time because you're going there having all these experiences, doing it basically as a drug instead of doing it as a plant medicine. Like these things actually have a voice. Like the plant medicine speaks. Like the plants themselves have a certain nature to them, a certain way to them that they decide, how these things should be. And they are also part of, it's not just the plant is deciding in the sense that the plant has an ego. the plant is deciding because the plant is a part of this divine play, right? This entirety of the sculpture, the entirety of the puzzle piece. And that's what we are a part of as well too. And like with something like ayahuasca, even the same thing, I say that with shrooms, like it's good to experiment with mushrooms, but you should like really be careful about how you do that. Like what's the environment you're doing it in? Who's the people that you're around? Like, do you have a safe environment? Do you have all the basic needs taken care of? Like, if you need to go to the bathroom, do you have a clean bathroom to go to? If you need water, do you have water there? If you need food, do you have food there? Like, those basic things had to be taken care of first. And then outside of that, you can set up the environment. You can start to have an experience. The other piece is really connecting with nature. No matter what you're intaking, whether it's cannabis or it's ayahuasca or whatever it is, try to be in an environment that's supported by nature. Like we actually live in structures that are very unconducive to our energies as people, as like forms of life. Like we're living in concrete boxes. So it's like, imagine like, right, you can trip in there, but it's like you're also going to be subject to everything that everybody else is thinking, feeling in those boxes, like in the other boxes above you, below you, around you, whatever. Like, those things are that way. So that's one thing. But the ayahuasca, like you really have to like find a community that you can do it with in that sense. Like find a shaman, find somebody that's actually like rooted in that tradition. Not somebody who got certified to be a shaman. Let me be very specific. Not somebody who's like who went to a class and attended something, whatever, no matter how many years they studied for, not somebody who got certified to be a shaman, but somebody who is a shaman by nature. Right? It's the same thing as like the thing with yoga. Like everybody wants to get a yoga certification and start teaching yoga and may open up a yoga class. But it's like that's not what that is. Like you can't just because you got a certification doesn't mean that you're a yogi. Like a yogi is like someone who lives in that state of being, of unity, right? Somebody who really embodies that truth in themselves in every aspect of their intention to their physical actions, like everything, right? So somebody like that is a truly a person in a godly state, a person in a divine state. That's a yogi, not somebody who gets a certification. The same way these ayahuasca centers, there's so many different things that are coming out now, mushroom research, psychedelic research, all this stuff. Like it's a lot of like rushing to provide an experience without having the rooted understanding of what that experience should actually be. So that's something that I would suggest to people is that do your research, be extremely cautious, have a natural skepticism, right? Like it's good to be skeptical with things, and trust your intuition. If you feel like something doesn't quite line up, let it go, because the right experiences will come for you for sure.
That is so true.
Yeah.
Because that's one of my goals, right? To try ayahuasca
Yeah.
and experience. Because I'm just like you said, the research I found is you have to go with the intention, right? And I look at it same thing with just with cannabis too, right? If you're super stressed out and anxious, I would never recommend you smoking marijuana, right? I would say go for hemp first, right? Because that state of mind, right, is all about the intention. And so I'm looking forward to that. And I laugh when you was talking about the box, man, because for me, whenever I'm here and I take my time, I look out the window and I'm smoking and I'm just like being, right? I'm like, I gotta look at myself like, hey, how does God look at it, right? I start to zoom out. I'm like, I'm this little box. Remember play The Sims, right? I'm just like this little box. I see myself looking through the window. I'm like, dang, Bevan, like, can you imagine just like how we come from being in nature? Right,
Yeah.
like in Caribbean, and then now I'm in this box with all these other boxes, and so that's why I have a lot of plants around here. But yeah, man, we put ourselves in these constructs, right? And
Yeah.
we don't understand that it's limiting us to what's possible.
It's really like it's growth. Like if you put a plant in a box and then you grow it in a box, it's gonna restrict itself to that box. Like it's gonna grow in the shape of a box. Like you ever seen those videos of the watermelon, for example? Like they'll grow a watermelon in like a glass box and then it will actually grow to be a box like shaped watermelon.
It's great here.
Right? The same thing with the human beings though. Same thing with all of us. Like if we limit our environment, and this is literally socioeconomics 101. Like if you look at different human structures, different societies, different cultures, different parts of cultures, right? That's what they call like different socioeconomic statuses or whatever the case, right? If the environment itself is limiting, whether it's physically, mentally, education-wise, opportunity-wise, whatever it is, then the person themselves won't surpass those limits easily. Like it takes a lot more. It takes a lot more for you to create that environment to actually like step outside of that, to be more than that, to like get yourself the right opportunities, line things up for you. But otherwise, the nature and the instinct of humanity is to stay within the confines of our restriction. But actually, the nature of our consciousness is to expand past the limitless. So it's like, it's so counterproductive to set up a physical environment that's so constrictive but then have a mentality of trying to be expansive, like that's basically fighting yourself in every aspect of your environment. And, you know, us living through one thing is one thing, but we can't pass this on to the next generation and say this is what's right. And I think that's what's a lot of, like, you know, our parents' generations, like, they had to work so hard to give us the opportunity that we have, even the chance of a life that we have today, to be able to have education, to be able to go to work, all these things, like, even to have a possibility to think past survival is because of the work that our parents' generation already put in, right? So, like, them, like, they didn't have all the opportunities to think about things, like, to think about how to really thrive in life past that point. It was about survival and establishing the basics and making sure that, like, these things are good and taking care of the family and taking sure that, make sure the future is possible, right? And then now that our generation is here, it's our responsibility to push that further and actually what direction does the future need to go in? Now that we have our basic needs, how are we supposed to actually make it, you know, possible now and make it real? And that's where it's like we have a real responsibility to do agriculture, to have, you know, land stewardship, to like really take care of the earth, like to be able to grow our own food, to know about plant medicine. Like if we don't do that, then literally we're delivering our children into a system of like a destined for illness and also depression and mental health, like disorders, all these different things that basically come literally as a result of the lifestyle that we choose to live.
So true, Ren. And for me, that speaks to me because a mom, I know how hard she worked, right, for me. And I have to look at it from my kids and their kids and their grandkids and so forth. So it's all about legacy. And so I work really hard to build everything, took all the risk I do so that I can leave something for them. Right. Yeah. And hopefully they understand that, hey, dad left, you know, a nice company here with all his assets and things for them. And I know that's the same for you with the brand, right? Is to make sure Akaveshka is so powerful that, you know, 100 years from now, you know, generations still benefit from all the hard work that you've done.
Yep. Definitely. Definitely. And it's also the thing is like, we don't know what our children want to do in their lives, right? Like, we only know what we want to do in our lives. We have no idea what our kids will want in the future, like what they want to learn, what they want to see in the world, what they want to create. Like those things are all their decision, but we have the responsibility to at least create the environment so that they can focus and dedicate their lives to learning. So I think that's one of the biggest things that's like a disservice to like children and in the way that we do things nowadays is that we, in America specifically, in this education system, we put so much stress on kids that they don't actually get to learn and experience. Like we had this, this visit at AU actually, just I think it was yesterday or the day before, the day is starting to blend together with this. We're in harvest season right now, so my mind, like, time doesn't exist right now. It's like what day is it, what month is it? I don't know. What is it, harvest season for the next year? But anyway, so like this like incubator event, we have this these students come in from Denmark. They're actually high school students about to graduate and go into college. How confident they were, how clear their skin was, how mentally healthy they were, how happy they were, like how like really comfortable they just felt about themselves and have felt about their direction in life, bro. It's like, and not just one kid, I'm talking about every kid in that entire room, like from all different backgrounds in Denmark were coming here just because of the way that their education system, their healthcare system, their public commodity systems, all those are basically structured in that way. It's like the kids actually get to focus the time that they're supposed to be focusing on learning. And if I'm not wrong, those kids were actually telling me that they get paid to go to school. Like when they're like as kids, they literally get paid to go to school. So I'm not familiar with the system, but that sounds fantastic. Like we should be incentivizing our children to want to focus and learn more. And like ultimately kids in America are so stressed, like whether it be about finding a secondary income, trying to fit within the system for education, like these goal-based outcomes when it comes to the way that they teach and the way that they grade things. Or like when you get past that system, like college or work or like, you know, there's so many different things that basically kids are just thrown into a world of stress and confusion without any of the preparation steps. And it really depends on the individual student. It's like the individual kid, whether they have the right parents to help them guide through that, whether they have the right support system, whether they have the right teachers, like everything in America is really like, it almost seems like a chance of luck. It's like, oh, well, you know, if this kid is lucky, it's, oh, if I get the best class, like, you know, like hopefully I can, if I apply for this program, I'll get in because of this. Like, that's not actually the way the world works, though. It's like, you don't have to, like, be, like, crapshooting through life, like, or, like, taking these, like, you know, these wide hip shots. Like, this stuff is really not supposed to be that way. Like, we can create a more structured, positive environment for our children so that they can actually grow up in a world that they can actually learn. Like, we only have the brain capacity development phases, like the way that we do in that accelerated time, like during this time in youth. And if you waste that doing whatever else, then by the time you get older, it's like really, it's difficult.
That is so true. Because we're in the Caribbean, education is so different than here.
Yeah.
And it's amazing when you go to different countries to see how it's set up. Like Denmark, somewhere in the top five of the happiest countries in the world, right? Them, Finland, Netherlands, all those Nordic countries, like just so happy. And yeah, it's amazing how the school system over there, right? I think college isn't as expensive as it is here, because it's not like for profit, right? It's all about the education system, because when you educate our kids, they're the ones, our future, who take care of the country and us. So when we get old, we know we have to worry, but it's kind of like backwards here in America. But I know that it's wonderful because a lot of us are coming together, right, and changing narrative. People are more open-minded now to, taking care of themselves and their mental health. And I'm so glad you talked about the farm, because that was my last question, man. So it's been bugging me to ask you. All your plants are on your pots, right? So he has, when he goes to his farm, right? From the videos I see, all his pots are on pallets. So why is it on pallets and not, directly sown to the ground like most people?
Oh man. So well, first off, it's not my farm. Definitely not my farm alone. So we're farming with this wonderful woman, Judge Vicky Oram. She is the owner of the land. And she's leasing it to Black Lotus Organics. So it's me, my brother Julian Bannister, and our brother Trey. So we're basically trying to build this regenerative hemp and agriculture company, not just growing hemp but and medicinals, but also growing food, and creating a really balanced ecosystem where we can have everything growing together and feeding each other, right? And Judge Vicky has given us the opportunity to lease the land from her and grow there. So we're setting up this operation. But what we did is, the land there, we had some soil testing done, and it came back to say that they had certain levels of, I believe it's cadmium, and then one other element tested high. So we didn't want to put the hemp plants directly in there, because what happens with hemp is that it's a plant that soaks everything out the ground, right? So like, it's actually an excellent plant for soil remediation, because you can plant it and then it would basically suck all the heavy metals, everything out of there, contaminants. But the problem with that is that if you want to grow for medicine, then it basically brings all those contaminants into the actual flower or the leaves, the end product of it. So what we're doing is we're putting it on pallets and in root pouches, which are these really nice like composted bags. So these are reusable bags, very durable, and they allow for a great aeration, as well as good water flow. Like, great material to grow in for sure. I would recommend their company to anybody who's looking to do that. So the thing with these bags too is like it allows us to control the soil levels that we're putting in there, how we're feeding the different nutrients, all that stuff. Kind of gives it a controlled thing. And if you let the roots can actually grow directly through the root pouches, because it's such a like natural aerated cloth material that the roots and the roots in the cannabis plants are so strong that they can literally like breach through the bottom of the bag and just literally keep on growing. So to prevent that, what we did is we put them on top of the pallet so that there's some kind of space between the roots and the ground, so they don't actually get out of there and then grow into the ground. Because if anything, they would have soaked all that metal up and everything. So we're just trying to keep everything clean and keep it as pure as possible.
That's what's up. I was just curious, right? Because just like you said, roots, my friend's plant was in it was a 10-gallon pot, and it just
Yeah.
busted, the pot and went down. So
Dog, when they get big, bruh, especially when they're flowering, they're aggressive. Like those roots are going, bruh. There's little you can do at that point. So we wanted to prevent all that by putting them on pallets.
I'm glad you mentioned the Black Lotus. So do you watch, have you ever watched Avatar, The Last Airbender?
The White Lotus Society.
Yeah, same thing. Like when you popped earlier, right? You had a green lotus. I was like, man, I like that's what's up, man.
So that's actually it's funny. So like way back, I have been watching Avatar, one of my friends, and I thought about that. I was like, so Uncle Iroh is actually one of my favorite characters, bro. Out of all like any animated series, bro, like out of anything in history, Uncle Iroh as a character, like I always like really look at that as like, somebody who's really compassionate, somebody who really just like wants to do good for the world. Like, he sees the good in everybody, trying to like really just be a positive person. Like, I look at, I always tell my friend, it's like I joke with him, it's like, you gotta be the Uncle Iroh you wanna see in the world. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like you gotta be the Uncle Iroh to other people to like try to bring that good and that positivity in the world. But I always enjoyed that. And like that show, like they have this White Lotus Society where it's basically, you know, their secret society of people who are like, you know, good people all around the world that are just trying to do good things and like trying to basically elevate the entirety of humanity and like make sure that preserve the good values of humanity, all these things. And like that's what for us the Green Lotus Society is, right? So for us, you know, on the front end aspect of it, it's like, yeah, we're trying to set up a clinic. We've been doing a mobile healing clinic where we basically do events every weekend that we can. Recently with the farm stuff, we've been a little more busy, but usually we'll go around the DMV and set up different events, the tabling events, and we'll set up our tent and have people come in for quick consultations for pain relief. So Julian, being a movement specialist, he'll make sure to get their physical alignment proper. Make sure that they're standing and walking the proper way, sitting the proper way. He'll ask them what kind of pains they have and why they might have that pain. If there's a certain type of work they're doing, or a certain type of activity that's continuously, you know, exasperating something, then he'll help them try to find out how to best correct that and make sure that they remove the pain for a longer period of time and try to actually restore the muscle groups the way they should be functioning. For me, I provide the Ayurvedic consultation with the diet, the lifestyle, the, you know, comprehensive aspects of how are they living, the mental health stuff. And then if they need the medicines, then we also provide the medicines as well. But like that first priority is educating them, making sure that they're good. So this is what we've been doing on a mobile clinic scale. But the idea is to actually, you know, eventually want to be able to create this into a nonprofit and like do this so that we can really just go around places educating people. Like this should fundamentally just be a structure. And it's not just us. We don't want to do this for the entire world ourselves. It's like we want to connect with the right people that have the expertise, like create a really functioning integrative health network that can, you know, start targeting these primary care concerns that people have. Because the idea is that you want to create better health outcomes in every aspect of it. And for us, Green Lotus Society is not just on the healthcare side of it, but it's also restoring the cultural arts, right? We also have this indigenous martial arts system called Silimbam. So we practice Silimbam every Saturday. We have a class over at the farm actually as well. And we have a couple students that come out there. We teach self-defense, some meditative aspects, self-discipline, as well as, you know, the staff fighting itself, some weapons forms, things like that. And, you know, body movement, body training. It's really important that it's like all these different aspects of our ancient cultures, they've been passed down for a reason. Like it wasn't just that like somebody did martial arts for fun or somebody went and studied this because it was interesting to them. Like people did all these things because they were all essential aspects of life. Like everybody needs to do some kind of movement. Everybody needs to do some kind of like proper exercise. Everybody needs to take care of their body and their health in some kind of way. So whatever that is for you, it's different, it's unique. But for us, for Green Lotus Society, we want to restore the arts, restore the culture, and really make sure that everybody has equal access to it, because that culture is our birthright. And, you know, access to things, access to knowledge is our birthright for everybody, regardless of what nationality, gender, you know, ethnicity, any of that stuff. None of it matters.
Oh man, and no words can be said after that. Man, I appreciate it so much. Any final words, man, before we leave?
Man, take care of yourselves. Like it's really important. Like there's a lot going on right now. There's a lot of distractions, a lot of things that can happen. But the thing that's truly you is the daily discipline that really that roots you. And if you can meditate once a day, do that. If it's just as simple as 2 minutes, a minute, 30 seconds, whatever, you just take some time to center yourself and breathe. That's the best possible thing you can do. Try to align that meditation period with the natural cycles of the day. So sunrise, when sun peak and sunset. So, you know, wake up in the morning, brush your teeth, whatever, get yourself comfortable, and then just sit down and get focused for a second. Like that in itself will make immense transitions in your life. Just do it consistently.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate it.
Look,
Thanks so
appreciate
much for
you, brother.
being here, man. Take care of yourself. Make sure you go to akivecture.com. Check the website out. Get the products. Works wonderful. Thank you guys for supporting me and everything we're doing with Mimea. Our app is live. It's up on iOS and Android, right? I'm so happy. That was a long journey, friend. But the app is up, so go download the app free. Support the community, get all the information you have. We have classes, grow classes, and the community Sambo Sundays, right? And Wake and Bake on Wednesdays. So thank you again, brother man. Appreciate it so much for
Much love, brother.
yes sir, yes sir.
Happy healing.
Healing.
Explore the benefits of cannabis, herbs, adaptogens, and more to improve your daily life. Connect with other members, attend exclusive classes, and more by downloading our Mimea app.